Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyond Ananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the undarkened corridors of power and shine a light ahead of us to where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together, to address problems instead of defending positions. Well, what would happen if a billion people worldwide took a stand in recognition that we humans are indeed cells in a larger superorganism called humanity, and then began to live their lives as if that were true? Our Wiki Politiki guest several weeks ago, Stefan Schwartz, he's a lifelong student of social change movement, said that when 10% of any population has an agreement around an idea, adoption of that idea becomes inevitable. And while it seems like gathering a billion people under one big intent is virtually impossible, it is actually virtually more possible than ever before. We now have the technological ability to connect billions of people on the internet one at a time. And now if we cultivate the spiritual, psychological, and political maturity and coherence, we may be able to achieve something that cellular biologist Bruce Lipton says is necessary for survival at this point, conscious evolution. Well, our guest on Wiki Politiki this week is Judah Fried, whose forthcoming book, Making Global Sense, reports on a dozen world social trends that prove more than a billion people on Earth, acting alone and together, spiritually and politically, are forming what he calls the Global Sense Movement, which is already gathering momentum for a quantum shift. Perfect timing for this quantum shift year, quantum leap year, in human consciousness to transform our life on the planet. He's also updating his prior book, Global Sense, inspired by Tom Paine's Common Sense, which revives the ideas and ideals of the 18th century Enlightenment to champion our 21st century Enlightenment. He's an award-winning author, international journalist, speaker, and activist. He also works as director of publishing for RIP Medical Debt, the New York-based charity that's abolished $1 billion in unpayable medical bills. You may remember Jerry Ashton, the co-founder of that group, was on Wiki Politiki a couple of weeks ago. Well, I'm looking forward to our conversation. Welcome, Judah.
Welcome. And good. Aloha.
Aloha. Or as we say, aloha.
Say howdy. Yeah, actually, it's almost howdy. In about 2 weeks, I'm moving back to Colorado.
So. Well, good. It's good that you have howdy and aloha in your repertoire.
That's right.
There's a phrase that you've used to describe your work with Making Global Sense, grounded hope. Grounded hope. What do you mean by grounded hope, and how does it apply now?
Well, I think people get caught up in a lot of the fantasies of ascension and being all concerned about spiritual evolution without grounding it into physical, mundane transformation of society. And as we look at the changes that are going on, I'm finding from my research that you said 10%. My research says that it's actually closer now to about 20% in the USA and in Europe up to about 30%, in Western Europe anyway, of people who are aware that we are all globally interconnected, this global sensibility that I talk about. And I can document that from a bunch of different vectors. And the point of it is that the fact that there is the research from people like Bruce Lipton, who shows that what we do spiritually and emotionally changes our thought process, which changes how we interact in the world, which changes the outcomes we produce in the world. When we know that that's what's actually happening, that gives a reason for taking concrete action. And from that springs the grounded hope that I believe we can apply to transform our society and ourselves.
Well, you know, there seems to be what I'm calling an evolutionary upwising, a gathering of awareness, an awakening that we really are all in it together. And you said 20% of people in this country, perhaps 30% in Western Europe, and recognizing that we need to wake up to the illusion of separation and wise up to the mm-hmm. power of love and coherence. In your book, you cite a number of examples. What indicators can you share with our audience that you have found that this awakening is really happening?
Well, some easy examples would be a billion people turning up for the Global Climate March, a billion people turning up for Earth Day every year. That's just the tip of the iceberg. There's an organization called the Natural Marketing Institute that has researched what they call lifestyles of health and sustainability. And they've researched about, if I have the number correctly, about 500,000 people in 25 countries representing different spectrum economically. And the numbers I just gave of about 20 to 22% in the USA is that core group of people who are participating in that. And there's another 20 to 25% who are on the periphery of that. These are the people that will go to the store and they'll look at the packaging before they buy. They will they'll read ingredients before they buy. They use their dollars like a boat rather than just spending money carelessly. And that's a secondary group. So between the two of those groups together, it runs up to about 45 to 47% of the population is already starting to be aware that we are globally interconnected. It's showing up in the choices they make with their dollars, the choices they make in terms of the cars they buy, the kinds of homes they live in, whether or not they're putting solar into their systems if they can afford to, whether or not they are buying products that have reduced packaging, whether or not they're signing petitions, who they're voting for, what they choose to do for their livelihood. A lot of people are just doing jobs for money, but there's more and more people that are doing work that really lights up their soul. And that, in my judgment, really contributes to the transformation we need in our world.
Now, it's really interesting.
So it gives
me
hope.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Continue.
I'm just saying that gives me hope.
Oh, okay, good. Well, you know, I think that, you know, we saw several articles appear in mainstream media around the new year saying, you know, things are getting better. And yet we see that these crises are just blowing up. We were looking at the fires in Australia. We're looking at the firing off of drones from this country. We're looking at all of these
definitely.
markers of things that are going south, and a lot of people are just looking at all of that, and they really can't see this this movement of movements, this coherence actually mm-hmm. cohering. What gives you hope that these forces that are awakening will actually cohere into something that will be able to move the dial?
Big piece of it comes from necessity. The more we move ourselves into a crisis situation, the more people are willing to shift out of their established positions and more people are willing to do something different than they've done before. There's also a deeper undercurrent that I believe is at play here. Because a lot of my work is based on Thomas Paine's views in Common Sense and his other writings, he came out really strongly against monarchy and hereditary succession. Well, I've updated that idea to talk about the whole notion of alpha male rule and authority addiction. Mm. The fact that we are addicted to external validation of one form or another. And we've addicted to this notion that us men are supposed to be in charge, which actually which actually disempowers us emotionally and spiritually as men. I'm very active in the men's movement, and I mean, I know men who are really working seriously on emotional authenticity and integrity and living lives of genuine honor, not superficial ego and, you know, blowing themselves up to make themselves look good. But the more men shift and the more women work towards equality, the more we get equality between all the genders and intersex and everything, the more we work on genuine equity in our society, the more we realize we're all interconnected. And that realization, step by step, person by person, is producing changes. When I first started eating organic and natural food in the 70s, I was living in Venice Beach, California. And there's a little tiny organic grocery there that just had, you know, these really gnarly looking carrots are all twisted and distorted, but they tasted good. But the organic veggies were really pretty ugly. But I ate them anyway. Well, yeah, and I worked in a restaurant on the beach there called Marathon Meatless Mess Hall, which I understand since years ago burned down. But it was very, very tiny. Very few people were really into it. Now we've got, you know, in the Denver area, there's and they're grown throughout the West and Southwest is this natural grocers, which just started out as Vitamin Cottage. It's a little place where the old ladies would go to get their nutriments. And now it's a major grocery store chain filled with natural organic food. Whole Foods, which started out as being in Denver, there was alfalfas and wild oats, and that got up, bought up, and now Whole Foods is owned by Amazon. It's big time. So that to me is a sign that people are realizing that we are what we eat, and so let's eat more healthily. So these are all indicators that I think shows that the shift is happening. At the same time, we've got this addiction to authority. We've got people who are willing to follow cult leaders, who, you know, politically or spiritually or emotionally. And as long as you have people who are willing to give away their power and not really claim the power that flows out of being connected to everything, then we keep putting ourselves in these crises, which fundamentally I believe is unnecessary for us to continue doing.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned Tom Paine, and going back to the founding of this country, we adopted many things from the Iroquois Nation as systems of governance and instruments of government. However, the one thing that we failed to adopt was the Council of Grandmothers, where the elder women got to decide whether the tribe went to war or not, and they could impeach a chief and so on. And it seems what we have right now, the misleader we have in place right now, is very fitting for if you believe that it's a dominate or be dominated world. If you believe that you have to dominate in order to survive, then why not have a leader who typifies that? So he's very congruent with this old paradigm. And unfortunately, that way of thinking was coherent enough to create enough of a push and movement to win the White House. And so, as Marianne Williamson
pointed
out, and as Marianne Williamson pointed out, I interviewed her last week, that we have instead of fighting, resisting the power of Donald Trump forces, that there needs to be a coherent sense of purpose that we gather around, something that we want. And when that becomes more coherent than the forces of patriarchy clinging on, then we'll see a change. So how do you see those forces perhaps becoming more coherent? As they speak in one voice, so to speak.
Yeah, so I believe that the word coherence itself has the answer, because it is the concept that it is connected. It is that one thing does adhere or cohere to something else, that it's all interwoven, interconnected, that there's an innate natural unity in all things. And as people get connected to this, they start moving from spirituality – into politics. I'm really devoted to bridging that gap between the two. It's so ironic because a lot of the people that I know who are devoted to personal and spiritual growth want nothing to do with politics. It's dirty, it's ugly, it's messy, it's corrupt, it's nasty, it leaves a bad vibe, a terrible taste in my mouth. I want nothing to do with it, right? And the people who are interested in social change and politics, they think all this spirituality stuff is woo-woo, mystical, escapism stuff and has nothing to do with anything that really matters. And fine, go worship your navel. And, you know, meanwhile, I'll go and embark my naval destroyers and we'll take on foreign countries.
It'll end up at Bethesda Naval Hospital and focusing
right.
on your... Obviously, a whole hospital devoted just to one belly button. It's specialization.
It's amazing. Right. And especially when you start building up the lint piles from the navel, it's just terrible.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's terrible. Okay, everyone just turned off the show now.
No, it's okay. People are used to that. If they listen to this show, they've just got to get used to that. That's okay.
That's right. That's right. You know, if you can't laugh at it, then you're going to cry. And if you cry, then you feel powerless. But of course, you're just processing your grief and getting it out of the way. But
yeah,
you know, I believe that if we realize that what we do and what we say and what we think and what we feel does change reality for ourselves and everyone else, it makes a big difference. I can use an example, my own health journey. At the end of 2015, beginning of 2016, I got diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. And I was told basically I had about a month to live. Well, I decided right away that I'm a cancer survivor and even did a video. If you go to Judah Fried on YouTube, you can see a series of videos I did. And I decided I may have cancer, but cancer doesn't have me. It was a conscious, willful choice of how I'm going to be. So I, along with doing traditional medicine, I did 2 surgeries and 2 different forms of immunotherapy, and I've been clear from cancer for almost 2 years. And now the little speck that resurged, little 1 centimeter speck. And so, okay, fine. I'll deal with it. And so I'm going to do immunotherapy again, and I'm going to do all the radiating my body with light, like I was doing, and saturating myself in spiritual healing and improve my diet and do all the things mentally, emotionally, physically that I need to do to be healthy and whole. And if I can do that as an individual, I see no reason why we can't do that as a society. If one person can do it, microcosm, macrocosm, anybody can do it. So, you know, but why not? If we want to be hopeless and give away our power to someone outside of ourselves, you know, then we'll suffer, but we don't have to.
Good. Well, we'll talk about how we can heal our own body politic when we get back with Judah Fried after these messages.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help my son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency? 911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Well, we're back with Judah Fried. We're talking about the global sense and making global sense. And we're also talking about, Judah, your own health journey and how it relates to what we're up to now. It sounds like you're using every tool in the toolkit. You're using everything from the most what some would call woo-woo and spiritual and intentional and so on. And then you're using, whatever medical science has to offer. And perhaps we need an integrated approach like you're talking about to dealing with the cancer that we have as a society that has come to the surface in the last few years. It's been growing beneath the surface. And I think that we, in order to deal with that cancer, we also have to deal with the heart disease, the lack of a coherent, sane, and sacred center in our country mm-hmm. that has caused the power of money to become all powerful. So can you speak to that a little bit? And then I also want to talk to you about your own journey and how your work has led to making global sense.
Sure. So maybe if we take apart that word disease and describe it as dis-ease, which is not a new concept. But for me, that was true because I was dealing with, when it came down to what was producing it, I realized it wasn't the toxins, even though Kauai has lots of GMO seed crops growing here that, fortunately, on the other side of the island, but that produces incredibly high rates of cancer. I don't believe that was the cause of it for me. I don't believe that it was the food that I ate or the drugs, anything that I had done. I believe it was emotional. And when I really delved into it, it was repressed anger from going back all the way to childhood. It was fundamentally a feeling of victimhood, a feeling that I am not powerful, that I am not in charge of my life, and that I'm at the whim of the universe, that I just get buffeted by the tides of fate and that I have no power over my life. And that feeling of being a victim and finding someone else to blame and looking for a scapegoat instead of really taking personal and moral and social responsibility for my choices, that was what I really had to address more than anything else to heal myself. And I believe that is the portal for understanding what we need to do as a species on our planet. Because if we know, it's like what Bruce Lipton talks about, that what we think and what we feel produces the thought forms that get embedded into our cellular memories, which affects the way, the neural engrams that determine behavior, the peptides, all the biochemistry. It's really reduces down to a spiritual action. And if we can make those choices as a species collectively, and we start increasing day by day the number of people that are living this way, I believe you are correct when you say that it's inevitable that we will shift. The difficulty, I think, is that in the past, we had the luxury of working things out over generations. I mean, look at the quantum shift that happened, say, even though I may not necessarily be in agreement with it, but look at what happened with the Reformation. We moved from an extreme totalitarian form of state-controlled religion or religion controlling the state to the Reformation was really fundamentally a democratic movement. That mm-hmm. anybody can read the scriptures, anybody can get directly connected to God, anybody can have forgiveness. This is, of course, presuming that you believe that you're born in sin and need to be saved from that. If you believe that everything is universally divine good, then that necessarily hold water. But it was a fundamental democratic movement, and the Bible was translated into multiple languages, and it encouraged literacy. It encouraged the kind of movement that helped feed into the Enlightenment, which led to Thomas Paine, who, by the way, never went by Tom. That was his attractors who called him Tom. But it led into you know, John Locke and Voltaire and Rousseau and all these people and Washington, Madison, and Jefferson, who are all actually, these guys weren't really Christians. They were deists who believed there's one universal life force. They didn't really ascribe any kind of personality or emotion to it. For them, it was more impersonal, unlike a lot of the New Age, New Thought stuff today. But it was a fundamental shift. But that took place over generations. Today, with climate change, we don't have time. I mean, what's going on in the atmosphere today is representing what we did 40 years ago, because it's about a 40-year lag time in the atmosphere. And the consequence of that is that even if we were to stop all of the usage of fossil fuels tomorrow, it would still be 2060 before we'd start to see any benefit. So, I mean, we're going to see massive coastal flooding. We're going to see mass migrations of people because of climate taking out whole areas. I mean, look at what's going on in Australia right now with the wildfires, what's happening in the West and in the Southwest, in the USA. I mean, it's going to be happening. And unless we are willing to adjust to it by shifting how we see the world, seeing that we're part of the problem and part of the solution, that we are both, then we're going to stay victims, and we're going to be suffering from that emotional, spiritual, social, and political cancer and economic cancer that has brought us into this mess where we are indeed in peril. You know, we have like a stage four societal cancer. Then, you know, it's not necessary. We don't have to continue plunging into the darkness.
You know, you talked about the emotional issues that you identified that might have been at the bottom of your getting sick, the dis-ease that you described. And very clearly, we live in a world where businesses externalize the costs of doing business. And in a certain way, we psychologically externalize things. We find somebody to blame. We get involved in these toxic conversations on social media that produce nothing. Swami calls it mass debating. You know, where they're mass debating. You know, people debating on this side and mass debating on that side and mass. And they should be.
And it's not ultimately fulfilling either, or satisfying.
No, they should be producing a healthy brainchild together. You know, and they're mass debating. And so, I think that what this is, another word that Bruce uses is fractal. This is a fractal. Mm-hmm. It's happening at the individual level where people are going through their individual climate crises, so to speak, their own internal terrain that's been influenced by their own thoughts and feelings and beliefs. And then what's happening as families, as communities, as nations, and as a species. And so that's why I think this upwising is something that is it's really all the same thing. It's awakening to our own responsibility, our ability to respond to these in our own lives, and how we can once we're tuned into perhaps something bigger than ourselves. I want to take a detour on that, because I think that, you know, when you mentioned your journey in dealing with cancer, and you also mentioned that there seems to be a separation between the quote unquote spiritual and the quote unquote practical. What kind of spiritual tools did you use in your journey? How would you describe those spiritual?
I've been blessed with some really wonderful people who have both worked with me as energy healers and taught me some tools that I can use on my own. One of the things that was really effective for me, and it's in my videos on YouTube. I actually illustrated it on the video. But I see myself sitting, and I picture myself as being a ball of light, and then I move from there into feeling connected into the planet. And there's a friend of mine years ago taught me what's called a pillar of light meditation. That's been very productive. But then I move myself outside of Earth's atmosphere, and I look down, and I see myself being saturated by sunlight. And then I actually move into the sun, and and I just let the sun burn away anything that isn't pure me. And then from there, I move out of our solar system and I go into the great galactic center, the whatever is that force in which our galaxy spins around. And I'll bathe in that light for a while. And then I'll go beyond that and I'll just be out in the vastness between the galaxies and just be filled with light and just filled with radiance and peace and contentment and joy. I mean, even as I sit here and say it, I'm feeling it. And that's powerfully healing for me. Because the more I let myself feel the love of the universe, the love that is the universe flowing through me, the more I'm healed. And the more I then interact with other people with more gentleness and more peace and more patience. And, you know, I've had to be patient with being a patient. And, yeah, it's an ongoing process. And every day is new. The some days I wake up just filled with joy. There's other days I wake up and, you know, my best meditation techniques don't really shift anything. And then a few hours later, I sit down and I do it again. Or someone will say something, and I'll tap back into the light, and I'll tap back into that inner joy and peace. It's unfolding. It's evolving. I figure as long as I'm in this body, it's going to be an ongoing process. And I don't have any plans to leave soon. It's like that song in Spamalot, I ain't dead yet.
Well, you know, and you're doing radiation therapy. This is real radiation therapy with no side effects, And, you know, I think that more and more people are finding, as you suggested earlier, when you're in crisis and when you're up against the wall, you start to consider other alternatives that, you know, when things seem to be going okay, that you didn't consider. I want to get back to, before we go forward with, you know, what's going to happen now, what were some of your influences? What kind of brought you to this work and what kind of mentors have you had and so on?
Well, my path has been rather interesting. I was raised in Denver as a Reformed Jew, which for some people in Reformed Judaism, it's all about really seeing and be seeing in the synagogue and, you know, more than really connecting to spirit or connecting to God, you know, even though it's considered to be a male God, it's still connecting to some external source of something. But when I went to Schwader Camp outside of Denver in the summer times, there I connected God with nature. And I would come home just filled with all the spiritual radiance. And within a couple of months in the family and the synagogue, it all sort of got washed away. So by the time I got bar mitzvahed at 13, I already had a lot of doubts. And I had a big argument with my father and the rabbi about wanting to give a speech that was more than to rabbi parents, grandparents, teachers, and friends. Today I am a fountain pen. I wanted to do something a little more meaningful than that. And, you know, that was a knockdown, drag out. And so by the time I was 16, I had discovered Ayn Rand and I had turned agnostic and atheistic. And then by the time I turned 18, I had tuned in, but I didn't drop out. But I by then I was a mystic. And, you know, so I realized that I'm part of something much bigger than me and that all my preconceptions and all my egoism was really just an illusion. I mean, amen to Alan Watts for the book on the taboo against knowing who you are. And, and amen to Ram Dass who just passed actually lived on a neighboring island, here in Hawaii. But be here now, you know, the same message that we got years later with Tolle, with the power of now. And it's all the same message. It goes back to the Buddhas, goes back even to Zarathustra, if you want to go back that far. It's nothing new. And so out of that seeking, in my early 20s, I, the rebel guy who come back from the demonstration in Washington, D.C., where we, you know, tried to shut down the government for a day to stop the war in Vietnam. I come back from that and I'm searching, and I get recruited into the Moonies. So for almost 3 years, I was a loyal and dedicated Moonie. I was put in charge of the state of West Virginia. I was supposed to win the state over for God. I could never recruit anybody. And so I kept on getting demoted. And finally, my rich uncle in San Francisco, who was was a very influential attorney, was J. Paul Getty's attorney, personal attorney. And, I thought, okay, I'll recruit him into the cult, and then I'll have prestige, and I'll get a plum assignment instead of being assigned this mobile fundraising team where we're going around selling flowers and soap and panhandling out on the street. And he said to me, do you believe because you really believe, or do you believe because you want to believe? So this happened about the same time as the church was doing this massive campaign to get Nixon to go before the American people and confess everything, and then the church was going to wage this multi-million-dollar campaign to get Americans to forgive him. And they'd already taken out full-page ads in the New York Times and LA Times and Wall Street Journal and elsewhere to do that. But Nixon didn't go along with Moon's plans for him, and so he ended up getting close to impeached, but he just resigned before the actual deed. But, by the time that came down, I'm sitting there out of fundraising, and I'm just, I'm getting less and less interested in what the church is doing. I'm realizing that they're manufacturing munitions for the government of Korea, and they're doing a lot of things that, the guy is claiming to be the Messiah and the leader of peace shouldn't be doing, in my judgment, like bribing congressmen, apparently, and things like that. And I was getting disillusioned. The more I read the newspaper, I said, how can we be supporting Nixon? How can we be doing that? And so I'm getting disillusioned. And so finally, in Chicago, I found a way to just walk away. And then I began a search for a deeper universal truths and checked out as many religions as I could and as many philosophies as I could and as many political philosophies and economic philosophies, and really delve deeply into history. And so in the process of that, I was led to or stumbled into the Enlightenment. And then all those wonderful thinkers who really talked about democracy and, who sort of debated among themselves, do you want to have a republic or do you want to have a real democracy? It's sort of like the debate between Hamilton and Jefferson that mm-hmm. It came down, and and the whole notion of revolution, and Paine's work to try and talk about the ideals in the French Revolution rather than the realities of it, which was horrific terror, the Reign of Terror, and his ideals. I mean, the Rights of Man was the number one bestseller in the entire 18th century, and Common Sense itself sold 150,000 copies inside of 3 months, and when it was first published on January 10th in 1776, he mapped out the whole thing that the founding, quote unquote, founding fathers did. The women are disregarded, sadly, but he laid out the blueprint that they followed to create a new country. So I followed all this stuff. I researched all of this, And meanwhile, I'm getting involved in Denver I'm getting involved as a journalist and ended up launching a long career that took me in a lot of local journalism, a lot of politics, and then international career covering new media. And I pioneered the coverage of the internet for the media trade magazines. And I got to be on the leading edge of some really amazing stuff. And as I'm traveling around the world and talking about the social effects of interactivity, I'm starting to develop this global sensibility and seeing more and more how everything they're connected. So it was about that time, late 1990s, early 2000s, I started coming up with the phrase global sense, inspired by Thomas Paine's Common Sense. Common Pain's Thomas Sense, and
we have Common Pain. We have to take a break, Judah. We'll be back with you. That's our Common Pain is taking a break. We'll be back after these messages with Judah Freed.
It is. We share the pain.
Okay. Thank you.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
The student asks the teacher, "How do I experience transformation?" The teacher replies, "When the student is ready to receive deeper answers, the student then asks, 'How do I know what deeper questions to ask?' And the teacher replies, 'When the student decides to commit to a practice inviting transformation, level 2 questions will be revealed.'" Hi, I'm Tomas Garza, and as a teacher and host, I'm inviting listeners to enroll in the Mastery of Transformation by joining me on Decide to Transform, your bridge to level 2 answers, Tuesdays, 1 p.m. Eastern, on Om Times Radio.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Well, we're back with Judah Fried, and we're talking about making global sense. I want to go a little deeper with Thomas Paine, because a lot of people, everybody's heard of him. But how do you say something more about how the ideas that he brought forth, in 1776 are pertinent to us in these times?
Sure. There's a couple of misconceptions I want to clear up that might help us understand him a little better. He's been adopted by the atheists and skeptics, but that's a mistake. He was a deist, a very devout deist who believed in spirituality, and he just didn't believe in religion. He was had no use for organized religion, and he said, "My church is my mind." So that's important to understand, that he did not believe in monarchy. He didn't believe in hereditary succession. He had the notion that assuming that anybody by the nature of their family, by their bloodline, has the right to control others, to rule a nation or a people, is akin to treating all human beings as flocks that can be inherited. So are we sheep that we can just be inherited by some shepherd? No, we are free individual people who can choose to unite together. Very much agreed with Rousseau about the idea of the social contract that we can make with one another. And so those ideas were very popular, and they changed the world. And then the countervailing force that arose about that same time was the Great Awakening with Christianity, who then saw all these people starting to take power unto themselves rather than some external authority, be it a church or an external God. And those two forces then have been competing in American history ever since. And we see it playing out today very, very clearly. And he was very much devoted to the notion of really using logic and critical thinking. And he especially fond of the word reason. He even wrote a book, The Age of Reason, which was sort of debunking organized religion. which, interestingly enough, was that book was accepted widely in Europe when it was first published. They said, oh, yeah, sure, of course. But when it got published in the USA, it produced a huge backlash, largely because this is something very few people know. A copy was given to Thomas Jefferson before it was published, and he wrote a little note outside of it on the manuscript that went to the printer that said, you know, this is really cool. This will help, eradicate some of the political heresies of today. Well, the publisher, without Jefferson's permission or Paine's permission, published that as a preface. And, of course, right then Jefferson and Adams were in this really fierce contest between whether or not we're going to have a democracy or an aristocracy, because Adams really wanted an aristocracy. He thought he was better. And, you know, he had passed the Alien Sedition Acts, which were as bad as, in some ways worse than we saw with the Patriot Acts that were enacted a decade ago. And so when Paine came back to the country after escaping from, well, he didn't escape, but he was like imprisoned by Robespierre. But when he finally got released, recognized an American citizen and got released, Jefferson paid for him to come back. And he was met at the docks by jeering crowds who threw rocks at him, you know, spat on him. And he was just became the scapegoat for all the anti-Jefferson people. So he ended up dying in poverty and largely disgraced, unduly, in my judgment. He was accused of being a drunkard, which he wasn't. I mean, back then you didn't drink the water because the water could kill you. You need to drink they just made up stuff to denigrate him because he was talking about democracy. He was talking about people being responsible. He was talking about land reform. He was talking about, you know, he wrote a wonderful little book called Agrarian Justice, which even today, a friend of mine, named Martin Adams, wrote a book called Land, A New Paradigm, which sort of takes some of those same principles and applies them to today. So there's a lot of his thinking that has been influenced by today. So the people who, the genuine libertarians, what I call the self-reliance libertarians, they tap into pain in a really good way, and they really see that idea of personal and social responsibility. And then you've got the libertarians that I call libertine libertarians, who are really into liberty without responsibility, without, mm-hmm. you only have to be accountable if you get caught. And that's what we see largely happening in corporate America today, and corporate worldwide, actually. So his idea has been misused. And so he's hailed and cited, but without really understanding what he actually stood for, which. So part of what my goal is to try and revive his original thinking. It's the same way as like Adam Smith was misunderstood. Smith was a contemporary of his. He published The Wealth of Nations three months after Paine published Common Sense. And the two, one was like Common Sense was political and Wealth of Nations is political. And the two of them together like a 1-2 punch, and we're still reeling from the blows. So I'd like to see us get back to what these original thinkers were talking about. Because if you really look at Adam Smith, in a lot of ways, he was very progressive. He didn't believe in big government. He did believe in government regulation when businesses got corrupt and were abusing their rights. But nobody pays attention to that anymore because they don't want to. And so I'm hoping to revive some of these original ideals from the Enlightenment era and help that move us into 21st century Enlightenment. Because if we can take the highest and best values in the 18th century Enlightenment and apply it in the 21st century towards Enlightenment now, I believe that will help us shift. So that's part of the reason why, this coming week on the 10th, I will release a new version of Making Global Sense, which is really my update of Paine's thinking. And then I will do another book that really goes into those 12 trends. Originally I had it all part of one book, and I realized that I have to do a lot more research to update my facts and figures. So I'm going to publish that as a separate book. But the one that I released this week is, you can go to globalsense.com to find out where it'll be. It should be up on Amazon by the end of the week. But the idea is just help lay out the theory. of us being interconnected, this idea of letting go of male rule and really creating genuine gender equality, of letting go of this authority addiction and really creating personal responsibility, personal sovereignty again. So my hope is that this will inspire people to do their growth work and to do their social change work and blend the two together so we can get ourselves out of our pickle.
Out of our pickle, our dilemma, our situation is a new word. And I really appreciate you distinguishing between these two different flavors of libertarianism, because it's almost as if the predators hide behind this notion of liberty, which is a very worthy notion. It's a very, I mean, to me, libertarians are way more idealistic than socialists, because they are recognizing that ultimately every individual has to take responsibility for their own life and so on. And the ideas that you're bringing, I mean, I traveled all across the country, 9,000-mile tour in September and October, and I can tell you that I talked to all kinds of people, not just the people that show up to the comedy shows, but people, you know, the waiters and waitresses and people you meet on the street and et cetera. And everybody knows what's going on. Everybody knows that the system needs to be impeached, that that we have a dysfunctional system, that we the people are one of the main missing ingredients from government by the people. And yet nobody yet really knows how to get past or how to get through the fog of overwhelming amounts of information, some knowledge, and precious little wisdom. So in terms of your work moving forward, how do we get through the fog of all of this and begin to cultivate wisdom in ordinary people, which does exist, is waiting to be cultivated?
For me, it's a dual-prong approach. One is to deepen my spirituality and my non-verbal connection to everything. That inner peace, that feeling of being one with all, you know, not like the hot dog vendor that makes me one with everything. But really feeling that connection, not just giving it lip service. It's like what they teach in New Thought, to really feel the unity with everything, the oneness. And then in the same token, it's really developing my intellectual abilities to really use critical thinking. I highly advocate people study the methods and tools of critical thinking and logic, and especially to learn about logical fallacies and the tools and techniques of propaganda so they can see through the BS that is propagated as being truth when it clearly isn't. I mean, we have a president who's told, what is the latest count, 14,000 lies and misrepresentations since he came into office. Give me a break. You know, and the fact that people have given away their power to this cult of personality who preys upon our grievances and summon the blame. There's a great line in that movie with the Michael Douglas, American President, says, you know, he doesn't care what the truth is. He just wants you to have somebody to blame so that you'll follow him. Well, no, thank you. I don't need a king. I don't need a monarch. I can be my own sovereign. And I advocate that we all do that.
You know, it's so interesting that some of the people who advocate the sovereignty movement actually voted for Donald Trump, thinking that he would be a disruptor. Yeah, he has. Okay, in the few minutes that we have left, how can people what is your message to people out there listening? How can they get involved, you know, with your work and with your book, and also individually and collectively in their own lives to help bring about this great uprising that we're talking about?
Well, I would let me go from personal to global. In terms of what would be wonderful for me is go to globalsense.com. And go to Amazon and you know get the new version of Global Sense, and then tell your friends, and feel free to post your views on Amazon once it's public, and that would be really wonderful. And spread the word and tell others and invite them to tell others. The wider process for the uprising is for us to really take responsibility and not accept the BS. Stop giving away our power to other people. Realize that we're connected and that we're both responsible. We co-create our realities together. That what we think, feel, say, and do changes our personal reality, changes reality for ourselves, changes reality for the planet, all the life forms on the planet, maybe in all the universes. And let's realize that because we are interconnected and because everything we think, feel, say, and do has an impact, that ultimately means we are incredibly powerful. We are not victims. That's an illusion. That's some just let us follow some master who wants to tell us what to do. We are incredibly powerful. We create our own reality by design or by default. So let's do it by design. Let's do it alone and let's do it together. And, you know, we have enough time to act. So let's act. Let's act up. What's the song? Or get up, stand up. Let's do it.
Yeah, I think that this is really the year. I think that part of what the political condition is we've had it in our face, and now we have to face it. Thank you so much, Judah Fried, for being our guest on WikiPolitiki.
Oh, I'm blessed.
His book
Thank
is
you.
Making Global Sense. We have a link on our WikiPolitiki website on the interview page. Go there, buy the book, read it, and join the upside.
GlobalSense.com.
Okay. We'll see you, and thank you for joining us. We'll be seeing you next week.
Blessings.